Welcome to this special edition of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler. In this episode, Cancer Network spoke with Jill Sals, Chief of the Lymphoma Service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, about recently approved and emerging treatment regimens for transplant-ineligible diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Sals discussed some of the available treatment options, including tafasitamab, CAR T-cell therapies, selinexor, and antibody-drug conjugates. He also looked ahead at some of the upcoming research on the horizon, including the BMIND trial investigating tafasitamab and rituximab. Dr. Sals, thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me on the podcast. We have a lot to get to with DLBCL, so I think we should just get right into it, if that sounds good.
Yeah, perfect.
So let's start really at the top with transplant eligibility and ineligibility. What factors do you take into consideration when deciding which patients are eligible, and really what exactly are you looking for?
So I think in relapse and refractory DLBCL, salvage therapy followed by auto transplant was really put forward in the 80s, 90s. And I think we have learned a couple of things in recent years regarding the result of this strategy. Obviously, eligibility is dependent on comorbidities and age, the ability to tolerate some chemotherapy, which is mild intensive, such as RICE or DHOP, DX, or RGDP. And these are a little bit more sustained therapies. And autologous transplant itself bears its own toxicity, including obviously a period of pancytopenia, but also organ-related toxicity due to the drugs that we use for the conditioning regimen. So that's already the path to decide whether the patient could be eligible or not for transplant, knowing that in addition to that, we do know that in primary refractory patients and in patients with early relapse, the result of transplant are not bad, but unfortunately still unsatisfactory, with about only 25 to 30% of the patient that really had a sustained benefit after 2 years. But when you bring the patient to this path of autologous transplant, the next question obviously is whether the patient responds to salvage chemotherapy. And it has been shown many years ago that patients who do not respond to salvage chemotherapy usually fail quickly transplant. There is still a debate, which is opened by several retrospective studies, registry studies, regarding patients that had a partial response, whether should you continue for transplant or whether they should be proposed for other therapies. But I think that's an open debate. And I will say, if the patient is in complete remission, complete response after salvage, autologous transplant is definitely the treatment of choice. If the patient fails to respond, you have to consider other options. In patients who had a partial response, it's a balanced decision.
And so you mentioned it. So let's just get right into those other options for patients who might fail. Let's start with tafasitamab. You know, could you briefly describe this agent for me, you know, the mechanism of action and recommended dosing and administration for patients with relapsed refractory DLBCL?
Yes, yeah, so tafasitamab is a monoclonal antibody directed against the CD19 antigen, which is widely expressed on diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, virtually all patients. It's an antibody that has been modified to increase its ability to direct antibody-dependent cytotoxicity, so-called ADCC and ADCP. As a single agent, it had a very modest activity, but still about 20 to 25% or even a little bit more of patients with DLBCL responded, including some patients that presented a sustained response, and the safety profile was satisfactory. Given its mode of action, the idea was to combine this antibody with lenalidomide, which is an oral drug we all know well, but which increases the ability of cytotoxic cells, NK cells, and maybe others to kill. And the idea was to increase ADCC and NK cell-directed cytotoxicity. So this led to the L-MIND regimen, which is a regimen where we use tafasitamab and an intravenous infusion initially every week for 3 months with an additional infusion during the first week. And we combine these infusions with lenalidomide at the standard dose, eventually having to drop it to 20 milligrams, but usually 25 milligrams per day, 21 day out of 28. After the first 3 months, and the majority of patients who respond will respond during this period, tafasitamab is given every second week, so bi-monthly, the same standard dose for until 1 year of treatment was a combination of tafasitamab plus lenalidomide. And thereafter, tafasitamab is continued as a single agent every 2 weeks until disease progression. The result of the L-MIND trial, which have been published in Lancet Oncology a couple of months ago, had shown that about 60% of the patient experienced response to this therapy, and 40% of them had a complete response. We recently updated this result during the ASCO meeting and showed that with further follow-up, the response rate is 57.5%, but the complete response rate is still 40%. What was interesting is that the median progression-free survival of patients receiving this combination was in the range of 1 year. And in patients that had a complete response, the median has not been reached, and the majority of patients, about 80% of them, are still in response at 3 years, now that we have 3 years of follow-up. This led to a median survival for the whole population in the study that is almost close to 3 years, 34 months. When we look at the different populations that were registered in the trial, most of the patients actually benefited from this therapy. Patient with a high IPI at relapse had a lower response rate, but when they responded, they could have a sustained response. There were, based on the inclusion criteria, very few patients that had really true refractory disease, and those patients actually usually relapse between 3 and 6 months after their first line therapy, so primary refractory disease. And the response rate could have been lower, but again, if they responded, they did well. And there were 44 patients in total that were refractory to their last therapy, and the response rate was not significantly different for this patient. So I think, obviously, for patients that had late relapse and are not primary refractory, this is a very interesting treatment. The side effects are those that you can encounter with this kind of therapy, including some neutropenia and thrombocytopenia, leading in about 10%, 12% of the patient in some episode of febrile neutropenia during the first year of treatment. And yes, half of the patient had grade 3-4 neutropenia, and about 1 out of 5 patients grade 3-4 thrombocytopenia. There were a few patients that needed transfusion. Interestingly, for those responders, patients, when we drop lenalidomide after 1 year, the fraction of patients with side effect was really limited. Besides that, there were a few side effects which were probably related to lenalidomide, such as rashes or diarrhea, but they were moderate in intensity and duration. So that's an interesting new regimen. And what we presented also during the ASCO meeting is that when used in second line, the results are obviously more favorable for those patients with increased CR rate and increased duration of response. For this patient, and this is going to be very soon published online. So that's an interesting regimen for our patients. Besides that, obviously, when because the treatment is not available, we need to collect more data regarding the use and the efficacy of this combination in the real life setting to see if the signals that we have seen in some patients which were underrepresented in the L-MIND trial can be consolidated, such as the patients that were primary refractory and are not transplant eligible. The patient with transformed indolent lymphoma, there were a few in the L-MIND trial and they behaved in the same way as the other patient. And despite the fact that the trial was not intended to recruit patients with double hit or triple hit lymphoma, anecdotally, there were also two patients like that, both responded, including one triple hit patient that had a prolonged CR. So it's not a contraindication for this patient, even if they are, as we know, very difficult to treat and usually poorly responsive to any kind of therapy.
Right, and you briefly touched on CAR T cell therapies, which is what I want to get into next. You know, specifically, just focusing on a handful of axi-cel, liso-cel, and tiso-cel. We don't want to get too in depth with these, so we can just talk generally about what you see with these three CAR T cell therapies realistically when they're implemented in everyday practice, and what value do they bring to treating patients in this setting.
Well, CAR T-cell therapy have really become very important options for patients with relapse refractory DLBCL. They are now approved in the third line of therapy. After two lines, we have three products, axi-cel, liso-cel, and tisa-cel. They have a little bit different characteristics in terms of safety, in terms of manufacturing, and we don't know really if they have differences in efficacy, although numerically some differences can be seen in the phase two trials, but there may be differences in inclusion criteria and time to evaluation. Having said that, what is important to remember is that, first of all, these treatments are not off the shelves right now. So when you envision to refer a patient for CAR T cell study, you know that the patient will receive his treatment in 4 to 6 weeks after this referral, time to have the insurance approval and the treatment plan. So you have to really have patients that can wait this time, either without a bridging therapy or with bridging therapy. We have had also concerns, although we don't have very strong data in this field, that patients that had received bendamustine just before the leukapheresis for CAR T may have an impairment of T cell functions and may not benefit as well as CAR T cell therapy, although this has to be confirmed in further studies. What I found interesting with the last product, which was made available, was the fact that there is experience with liso-cel, and it exists also with tisa-cel, but of outpatient administration of this product and the possibility to deliver this product and not having the patient to stay in the hospital. Why is that? Because we remember that the major side effect associated with all CAR T therapies are first an episode of pancytopenia, which is variable in time and intensity, but usually lasts from 8 to 15 days, can be potentially prolonged in some patients, and patient can be prone for fever and infection. The second major side effect is the cytokine release syndrome, grade 1 or 2 in 50 up to 80% of the patient, depending on the product, but grade 3-4 in about 10 to 15, 20% of the patient, again, depending on the product. It's even less with some product, and that's probably what allows to have this outpatient monitoring of some patient. And the last side effect is a neurological event, so-called immune cell-associated neurological symptom, ICANS, and this can create confusion, seizure, or a couple of issues. But again, it's with a 4-1BB construct, it's in the range of 10 to 15%. It's a little bit more frequent with CD28 construct, about 25 to 30%, grade 3, so this has to be monitored. But I think we are moving forward. There is obviously the issue of referral. There is the fact that if patient with very unstable disease, high LDH, poor performance status, this treatment may not work, but the eligibility criteria are wider than the one we currently use for autologous stem cell transplant.
Right, absolutely. And so shifting gears, I wanted to talk a little bit about selinexor, which was recently FDA approved for adult patients with relapsed refractory DLBCL after 2 to 5 systemic regimens. What were your first initial thoughts of this approval, and really how does this agent impact the treatment of DLBCL with regard to the existing treatment options that are available?
So Selinex was approved last summer for patients in third or fourth line of therapy with DLBCLs that don't have any alternative option. It's obviously very nice to have a new agent approved, and selinexor has the advantage of being an oral agent. We have to learn how to use this agent, which development was a little bit long and hampered by some of the particular side effect profile of this agent. The side effect profile include hematological toxicity, including thrombocytopenia, which can preempt regular dosage and needs to eventually diminish the dose or space the cycles, but also some general symptoms such as fatigue and GI events. Well, these symptoms probably can be better managed with the use of dex or olanzapine and a couple of other agents that may help to diminish the incidence of severity of this side effect. So overall, it's an agent that can be used, I thought, with some precautions and obviously with some close monitoring of the patient. The response rate is modest. It's about 30%. We were not characterized specific populations that were more responsive. Again, there were some selection in the trial because patients that had immediate refractory disease were not eligible for this trial. But it's a drug that can be used in some patients. And again, it's an oral agent. You have to make some precautions, administer supportive therapy, and it can help some patients. I have heard about patients being on this drug for 2 years with a very aggressive disease that had failed the previous chemotherapy. So why not try it when you have used the other option and they didn't work?
Right. And so shifting gears one more time to antibody drug conjugates. And there's a couple I had in mind to talk about, brentuximab, polatuzumab, and loncastuximab. Could you talk a little about, they're all three are FDA approved for this setting. And what do these approvals really contribute to the treatment paradigm, and especially compared to the rest that we've already discussed?
So maybe the brentuximab vedotin, strictly speaking, is not approved for DLBCL in the relapse setting. It's directed against the CD30 antigen.
Right.
It's been approved for T-cell malignancies and the Hodgkin lymphoma. But you may want to seek approval for a particular patient that express strongly CD30 antigen and then use this antibody alone or in combination. But most of the experience and the approval with other antibodies came with polatuzumab vedotin and loncastuximab tesirine. What is interesting is that these are different antibodies targeting different antigen, but with different toxin. So let's discuss polatuzumab vedotin first. Mm-hmm. This is an antibody that has been developed for years, have shown some interesting single agent activity with response rates in the range of 30 up to 50% in combination to rituximab. And the approval of this agent was based on a clinical trial that evaluated either bendamustine rituximab in relapsed non-transplant eligible DLBCL patients or bendamustine rituximab plus polatuzumab vedotin. Very interestingly, it was shown in this phase two randomized trial that the response rate was significantly higher with the combination, with about 40% of the patient reaching a complete response with a combination of BR and polatuzumab vedotin, with a median PFS of several months, depending whether it was investigator assessed or independent review, but 6 to 9 months, and a 1 year estimated overall median survival. So an interesting result with a toxicity which was hematological, as expected, given the combination of this toxin plus bendamustine, also some infectious toxicity, and with prolonged administration of polatuzumab vedotin, potentially neurotoxicity, but which was reversible. A couple of patients still presented with infectious complications, so these patients have to be monitored. What I should say is that we presented with investigators of the trial an update of the series of patients, but an additional series of patients that were treated with a successive phase two study with a combination which basically confirms these data and show that this combination is useful in the relapse refractory settings. There are now more than 100 patients in the trial. And if we look at patients that are in second line or are not refractory. This has really encouraging result for this regimen, which actually is approved in third line setting in the US and second line in Europe, but can be an interesting option for this patient. The last one is loncastuximab tesirine, and that's a different antibody instead of the classical MMAE compounds that we found in brituximab vedotin or polatuzumab vedotin. This is a PBD. This is a different toxin that is basically acting as an intercalating agent, so able to kill cycling cells. Loncastuximab is directed against CD19. And the trial has shown the efficacy of this antibody both in diffuse large B cell and other B cell malignancies. The pivotal phase 2 study has shown that a little bit less than 50% of the patient responded to this therapy, and about 25% or so of the patient had a complete response. The median PFS overall was again in the range of months, but again, the duration of response for responder patients was really encouraging. There were some hematological grade 3-4 toxicity, which was found to be manageable. There is in some patient elevation of LFTs that need to be monitored. And in a few patients, there is also edema or other fluid and syndromes, which can be monitored with a dose of diuretics and can be monitored. And there is no, given the compound and the toxin, there is no neurological toxicity such as peripheral neuropathy that we found. So it's an interesting compound. It has been also proposed as a bridging therapy for patients that need to receive CAR T cell, a setting where we have also used polatuzumab vedotin in the recent years.
Right. And lastly, I just wanted to look ahead a little bit at some upcoming trials for treating relapsed refractory DLBCL, specifically focusing on the BMIND trial. What can we expect with this research and really kind of looking at it as a whole? I would just ask, are there any other trials besides that where you think there'll be a strong impact?
Well, I think the BMIND trial is an important trial because we do know, as I mentioned, that bendamustine rituximab has a very limited efficacy in the relapsed DLBCL trial. We know bendamustine is an alkylating agent, and we may have expected some activity, but those patients have been previously exposed to rituximab, and maybe the combination is not effective anymore. So the idea of combining bendamustine plus tafasitamab, which instead of targeting rituximab, CD20 with like rituximab, targets a different antigen, which is CD19 in this setting, is really interesting. And I think that we are eagerly looking forward to see the result of this trial, which is a head-to-head comparison of bendamustine tafasitamab versus rituximab bendamustine. Besides this study, I think there are a couple of trials that are assessing the combinations of the available agents, polatuzumab vedotin with RICE or with GEMOX or POLARGO trial. There are also selinexor in combination with different therapies, and obviously tafalen will also go forward. We are pretty excited about the recent results that were presented in recent months and recently in meetings regarding bispecific antibodies, which appeared to be a very promising drug in the field of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, with some of these agents reaching a CR rate over 30, 40, even 50% in relapsed refractory DLBCL. Although we need to see a little bit more confirmed durability of the response. And there are also some side effects, such as cytokine release syndrome during the first infusion. Besides that, other ADC are being developed. And we know that there are trials comparing in transplant-eligible patients autologous stem cell transplant versus CAR T cell. And if obviously this trial show that CAR T are better than autologous stem cell transplant, at least in this setting, this will move for transplant-eligible patient CAR T in second line of therapy. But we may then have to think whether for patient for which we may not have considered a standard transplant but could be eligible for CAR T, CAR T can be moved also earlier in line of therapy. And finally, some of these agents do not oppose themselves. They may be combination of bispecific and CAR T. They may be a combination of tafasitamab plus bispecifics. So I think we are looking forward to new combination in the future for our patients.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Sells, those are all the questions I had for you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, you can visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again next time.